Hello, I'm Andrew Scrivani.
And I'm Chef John. Welcome to the Chef John Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Chef John Podcast. We are here together again. I hope you had a wonderful Halloween. I hope you have recovered from whatever stomach ailments from all that candy you ate. And we are back. Here we are. It's beautiful in the fall here in New York City. How about you, John? How is it in Northern California these days?
Very nice. Hello. Thank you. It is gorgeous around here this time of year. And by gorgeous, I mean it's generally not 100 degrees anymore.
Or on fire.
Or just a burning pile of, debris. So everything's good. Weather's nice. Feeling good. Looking good. Or so they tell me. I love this time of year.
Fantastic. You know what else is fantastic? All of the wonderful comments and reviews we've been getting about the Chef John Podcast. Some of them have mentioned a few things about whether or not we have things to sell, like cookbooks or other things that are available to the public. And it reminded me of something that, in terms of both of us and our personalities, the idea that we have to sell ourselves is somewhat uncomfortable. And I wonder if there are, are things about that particular experience that you'd like to share.
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty introverted. I always am more comfortable in the back of the kitchen versus, out on the floor, as they say in the business. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons I actually got into cooking, I love the restaurant life. We went out to dinner every Friday night. I don't know if I've shared this yet. That was a big family tradition. Every Friday, no matter what was going on, how busy, how slow, how much money or little money, my father always managed to take us out on Friday night. So just the excitement of the restaurant, I think that was like one of my earliest, like, hey, this is different than what we do all the other times of the day and week.
Sure.
So I was always drawn to that, but it was just something about when I started working dishwashing and do those kind of jobs coming up, always just more comfortable behind the scenes, which just works for my personality. So yeah, whenever you have to sort of get out there to promote something, whether it's, we should do the blogger conferences, whether it's a new product or something, I haven't gotten that far yet, but the closest thing probably was the time I was supposed to promote a cookbook. Now, a lot of people don't realize I actually did a cookbook a million years ago. And there's a very good reason why a lot of people don't know that, because of how it came to be. You don't have anything to do for a minute. This is kind of a long story.
No, I'm good. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here as long as we're recording this podcast. I will be here.
Very good. So I was contacted. This is a long time ago. Food Wishes was still relatively new. By a British, or is it English? British publishing company. They were putting together a cookbook of classic American recipes.
Okay.
And they saw my blog and they saw I had a fairly large collection, assumed that I was an expert on American cuisine. I think my about.com page, where I curated the American foods for about.com. And by the way, for anyone under 70, about.com used to be a big website that had all these different topics, and they'd have one person curate each topic. Anyway, they thought, because I was that guy, I could consult and read over their American cookbook, give my 2 cents, make some tweaks, edits, and so forth. So I get into this thing, and I'm turning these pages, and I'm just, my mouth's open, because none of these recipes are even close. It's like, it'd have guacamole, and the recipe would be pretty close, except then they had garnished it with dill.
And guacamole isn't necessarily a classic American recipe.
And again, thank you for that. But I could see it's like an American appetizer. It's on everybody's Super Bowl menu.
Okay.
So I gave him a pass on that part. But when's the last time you ordered guacamole and it came with dill?
Never.
Exactly. So it was lots of little things like that. So I was like, let me pitch you folks something. I have lots, like hundreds of actual American recipes. Already printed, already published on my blog. Why don't you just use my recipes? And instead of hiring me as a consultant, let's take this up, kick this up a notch, as they used to say in the early days of food television. And I'll just write a cookbook for you folks fire whoever was doing this other one. So long story short, that worked out. They decided to hire me to do an American quiz. It was called, I should probably know this, just it had such a generic name, I can't even remember it. But in fairness, this is like almost 15 years ago, 12 years ago. So they hired me to write the book. It took 6 months, maybe, sending them recipes. I already had the photos. I was doing the photos and the cookbook.
I look down upon that part, just so you know.
And as you know, food photography is super easy. any idiot can snap a picture of a cheeseburger.
Photo monkeys everywhere taking pictures.
Yeah, you know, unless you want it, of course, nice, but we didn't. So I put this book together, send it in. They put it together. They're going to publish it. So now I have to fly to New York to go to the Javits Center, one of the finest venues in all New York, as you know.
Yeah, and you love flying. I know that.
Like, if you can't get your convention into a nice place, you go to Javits Center. So this is where this year's book, whatever it's called, the big book fair, all the booze, every publisher book. So I got to fly to this, shake hands, talk to people. But also I have to proof the galleys. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Page by page, line by line.
So you wrote the book and now you're the editor.
I'm editing also. Well, they edited it and they're like, here's the final proof. Look at that via mail. I thought that was going to be good enough. Oh no, you have to fly to New York. You have to proof this line by line, sentence by sentence. And you've done this, right? You have to then do a check mark at the bottom of each page saying this page is cool. Good to go.
Nope. I didn't do that.
You didn't do that.
Nope. I finished my manuscript for my book. And I sent it to my editor. They edited it and they published it. I mean, they sent me galleys to look at, but
right.
It wasn't like I had the responsibility line by line. That was the editor's job.
Okay. Well, that's going to make this story even better though, because because I thought that was typical. Apparently not.
No.
Anyway, they're going to put my name on the book, which they didn't. They're like, your name not going to be on the spine. It'll be inside the book. It's clearly going to be, but it's got to be, you know, our publishing company, because they're the company, I don't want to give names here, but they're the company when you're in a supermarket and there's the end cap that has the cookbooks, like 47 of the world's most amazing Jell-O recipes.
Right.
That's who publishes those books.
So safe to say in this scenario, without even knowing the rest of the story, you got hosed. So, you know.
I got hosed, but then I was the hoser.
Oh, okay, let's go. I am intrigued.
Here I am. So now I hate to fly, as you know, but even this is back before I was just a complete lunatic. So I dope myself up on, you know, cheap liquor, and I get on the plane, fly to New York with Michelle, by the way, who's going to get to go to New York for her first time. And she's out playing in the city while I'm at the Javits Center meeting, greeting. And then in the evenings, I'd sit at this publishing company, spend about 3 or 4 hours proofing every page of this cookbook, which again, you say is not normal. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is probably what everyone does.
Nope.
No, not even close.
Nope.
So anyway, found a good amount of typos. I guess that's not unusual, which was weird because I was like, they wonder who went through this the first time, like some obvious stuff. So make the changes, get back to San Francisco. They shoot me a digital file of the corrected book. Every single thing I found has been corrected.
Great.
So now all we have to do is shoot the file to China, gets printed for 2 cents a book or whatever the cost to do stuff. And then it'll be published in the fall, whatever the timing was. In the meantime, my handler at this publishing company contacts me. John, we have the greatest news you're ever going to hear. I don't know how we did it, but we secured a spot. If you can pass the screen test, on Cooking with David. This is next to Oprah, this is the place you want to be with your cookbook to just move thousands and tens of thousands of copies.
Yeah, that's Art of the Pie. When I photographed Art of the Pie, Kate McDermott did the QVC show. And
it was huge, right?
Moved a lot of books. Yeah, she moved a lot of books.
Just huge amount of books. So I fly to Pennsylvania. They put me up for a couple of days. I meet David. I go through the screen test. A lot of fun, terrifying. Like, again, I'm not a person that wants to be out in front of the camera. That's why you only see my hands in the videos. But I did fairly well. I passed. They gave me the thumbs up. You are approved to come on QVC and hawk your book. So date set, publisher set. I get a couple of copies of the book sent to my house in the meantime. And I open the book and it is littered with typos.
What?
And not like, oh, that was supposed to be a comma, not a semicolon. It was like American pie, like the word pie twice in a row.
Oh my goodness.
Or even better, a random word in the description of a recipe or in the procedure with an X and a Y at the end of the word for no apparent reason.
Wow.
Like over medium heat, T-Y-X. I'm assuming this is not a normal thing.
No, and considering the hours that you put into making sure that wasn't the case.
So I get on the phone and I'm like, hey, excuse me, a couple quick things here. Remember when I flew to New York and, you know, did all these typo corrections and painstakingly checked each page one by one, all 300 pages, whatever. I was like, somehow the file that went to China, well, you know, just that wasn't the one they printed. There's massive typos, really embarrassing typos, and this is not good. I'm supposed to go on QVC in like a month and a half to sell this thing, and I'm not, you guys got to get this reprinted. I'm not going to embarrass myself.
All right.
Keep in mind, this is right, the timing of this was right when food bloggers were amongst the most hated in society because we were taking jobs away from actual food writers. We were taking jobs from cookbook writers.
Not to mention photographers, by the way.
That's fine. That part was fine. It's that part. That was the easy part. So unless you want them to look good, then you got to hire.
And you got to hire somebody else.
Which I did. I just used soft focus. So anyway, blur the background a little. People think you have an expensive lens. So I'm like, I'm extra paranoid. I don't want to be the first food blogger, one of the first food bloggers that has this high profile cookbook being hawked on QVC. And it looks like a complete amateur doofus put it together. So again, being probably too sensitive. So I kind of am like, here's the deal. If you guys don't get this reprinted by the time I'm on there, I'm not going on QVC. And they're like, oh, okay, no, let us check this out. Come to find out, I hear through the grapevine, through one of my other contacts, the whole QVC setup so they could move these error-filled books quickly.
Ooh.
So that those didn't go to the stores where people were like, hey, we can't put this in our shelf. It's full of typos. They're like, people calling on the phone, it's already like a done deal. They can't proof the book. They're not in a store. They're just right. you yucking it up with David on QVC. You'll move all these books and then we'll reprint. I'm like, this really does not work. This plan is not good for me because I'm going to be the food blogger. I'm going to be the case study. All the snarky food writers are going to be like, see, this is why the food bloggers aren't allowed to do cookbooks. They don't know what the F they're doing. So I was like, you know what? I'm not bluffing. And their attitude was like, nobody is stupid enough to cancel a QB. This is like your golden ticket.
It really is.
So they were not taking me seriously. And you know what? I thought about it for about a week. I called QBC, the contact there, who's in charge of scheduling. I said, you know, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm canceling my appearance. And they're like, yeah, good one. No one does that. And I'm like, I know. I've heard this is going to make history, but I'm going to cancel it because I'm not going to go through with this. I'm not going to go on there and intentionally, knowingly push these incorrectly printed books. Who knows how it even happened? And it wasn't like there was three of these examples. Like there was 25 typos in this book of just, you know,
yeah, egregious.
significant stupidity. And so after about 10-minute very awkward conversation with QVC, because they kept thinking I was kidding, like, sure, are we being recorded? Is this a prank for your blog? Like, how this is hilarious. I'm like, all right, thank you. Anyway, I got a call from the publisher like the next day, like, what have you done? What have you brought upon us?
Never again, right? They'll never get another author again.
I did not go on QVC. It did not sell tens of thousands of copies. It is currently on Amazon, by the way. It's called The Best of Home Cooking.
Wow.
Over 150 timeless recipes.
And that's about how many copies it sold.
And I think it did okay. It has a very nice rating on Amazon. I get no part of the action. It was a contract job because they originally hired me as a consultant. And then just for more money, they let me do my recipes.
So you going on QVC, you had no financial stake in that?
No, other than a couple grand for my trouble flying there and back.
Okay.
But anyway, that is my sad, tragic tale of the time where you really have to get out there and sell yourself. And it could not have gone worse. Although now, this many years later, I have maybe the best QVC story when people are like, you know, when and if I'm ever in a crowd of like, oh, I was on QVC selling a how to poach an egg thing. And I'll be like, hey, good story. Here's mine. It was quite the experience on every level.
You probably are the only person in the history of that show that canceled.
Yes, absolutely. The person on the phone was like, no one's done this because no one would ever do this. And the person on the phone was like, you know, it might be embarrassing short term, but just being on there, that's a resume. Like you can, that's going to open other doors. And I'm like, probably true, but I'm not going on there and selling a book that has a recipe for American pie pie.
You know, I like the principled stance you took. Even if you didn't have money at stake, I like it.
If I was getting $2 a book.
Well, that's a whole different story.
I'm like, American Pie Pie. It's just, you know, you want someone to remember something, you repeat it. And like I joke about now, the book might have had a lot of typos, but at least the photography was mediocre. So that was the biggest stage, biggest performance, most out there I would have had to be. And yet I wasn't.
That was a true celebrity fumble. And yet you became famous anyway.
I was an innocent bystander and I became famous another way. So that's fine.
Yeah, you became famous anyway. Or at least your hands became famous.
Most famous knuckles in the business.
So, John, you know that I teach a lot of classes about photography.
I do.
I'm going to be offering another opportunity for people to learn from me. And again, my Instagram has become sort of this constant pitch for all these different things that I'm offering people. And it makes me uncomfortable a little bit, but it is a living and it is something that I enjoy doing because I really do enjoy the teaching. I do not love the selling. So, but there are, you know, standing in front of an audience, not a problem. Talking to a group on Zoom, not a problem. Having to tell people you need to spend money to do that with me, not so comfortable. But, you know, that's part of the business, right? It's part of what we have to do.
And just gave me an idea for speaking of a business, teacherpimp.com.
Explain, please.
We do the selling, not to mention protect you from the other sellers.
Yeah, they call those PR agents. We just can't afford those.
All right, they have a nicer name. Never mind.
Yeah, but yeah, it starts with a P, but it's not pimp.
All right, carry on.
All right. Well, I was just wondering, you know, when I know you've done some teaching as well. So, I mean, how's that experience for you?
My teaching was different because I was a teacher at the Culinary Academy.
Yeah, right.
But there is a comparison there because while I wasn't selling a product and presenting like a service, and I was trying to convince people to buy into. I did teach the least popular class at the Culinary Academy. So in a way, the challenge was to sell the class as important, as interesting, as something they should pay attention to. So I kind of get what you're saying. I would love to just have had them not have to convince them to pay attention.
I'm intrigued though. What is the worst class to take at Culinary Academy?
Okay. So think of all the reasons you would go to a Culinary Academy. Learn to cook, become a famous celebrity chef. You know, the thing no one ever says is, I want to go to culinary school to learn how to use word processor or to learn how to prepare myself for a job interview or how to do a food cost in a spreadsheet. Like, that is not top of the list. Oh boy, culinary school, let's do math.
Yeah, most of the kids who go to culinary school are the ones who didn't want to do math.
The ones that, yes, and by not want to, you mean they couldn't do it that well.
I'm not saying that, you did. That's on Chef John right there. All you people who failed math, that's on Chef John.
So anyway, and I knew this going in, and again, these are mostly young kids, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, just not into math or business classes at all. So the challenge there for me, speaking of getting up in front of a crowd and selling something, I had to convince them that this was interesting stuff. So, which I think I did a pretty good job of. I turned it into create your own restaurant, your fantasy restaurant. And then over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're going to take your dream menu. We're going to cost it out. I'm going to teach you how to do portioning. So it became like a something they could, a little more artistic, something they could sort of, you know, sink their claws into versus a spreadsheet with numbers. Which reminds me, one of the students called their seafood restaurant a case of crabs. He was a graphic artist. He had this, the coolest logo. He was so proud of this. And it was like a crab crawling out of a case. And I forget, I think the crab had a name, like his mascot. Anyway, he was so taken with his drawing, he actually called his project a case of crabs. So anyway, I just remembered a super funny story, though, from when I would start this class. My first lecture was the big, like, seller. Mm-hmm. Like, if I didn't nail it the first impression, then you lost them and they were like going to be bored for
this.
This
is 2 a.m. infomercial time.
So this is 2 a.m. infomercial time at, you know, 11 in the morning.
Okay.
In front of people that just do not want to be in front of you. So I had a couple of tricks. My first trick, I would always be slightly late coming into the class, and I would leave my phone on my desk in the front of the class, and I would be in the chef's office, and I would let the clock hit, you know, whatever, 11 o'clock straight up. And I would call my phone from the chef's office so that my ringtone would ring in front of the whole class. And it was Jay-Z, Dirt Off My Shoulders, the opening bars to that.
I know it well.
So then I would rush in like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was making some copies. And people would be like, chef, your phone went off. Then they'd be like, hey, cool. You like hip hop? So that was my first trick. Pretend you're cool.
Nice.
You have a cool ringtone. And then my other trick was I'd open up with sort of a little story on my, how I got to San Francisco and how I, you know, the least favorite class I took in culinary school, squash bird. I think we may or may not have told that story.
Yes, we definitely talked about the squash bird. Yeah.
You know, so anyway, this is my big thing. So, here I am, first day of one of these classes, and this real nice young man before class had given me a gift, a little package of mixed nuts that his family did for business. Mm-hmm. Candies, nuts. He put a little, he's like, I want you to have this, Chef. Not brown, just not kissing up, just family wanted to pass this along to my instructors. So anyway, that day I'm snacking on these peanuts and almonds and things before class. And I do my whole routine and I start my lecture and I get maybe hello, welcome. And three words into it, I start choking on this almond skin stuck in the back of my throat.
We've all been there.
So like how to lose a class before you've even started it. So now I'm getting sort of red face and I cannot catch my breath. And the more you try to gain control, like the worse it is. And I'm kind of half laughing, half embarrassed, half just stammering, spitting, stuttering. And now, of course, what are 18-year-olds doing? They're just dying of laughter. So now I'm getting slightly annoyed. They're just like kind of not even graciously waiting for me to get over this. They're just like, gosh, I'm trying to get to this. Anyway, I say, which is, I think, such a brilliant thing to say at that point, hey, stop it. It's hard to talk with Jim's nuts in your mouth. Because he had given out some to the class too.
Oh, okay.
Like that did not help. That did not make it any better. Because now I went from choking on Jim's nuts to just telling the class, the reason I'm choking is because I have Jim's nuts in my mouth. And then I finally got control and it ended up being a pretty good class. But I'll never forget saying, like, trying to sell yourself and giving the, you know, the best impression, the best version of what this is going to be. Did not go that well that day.
No. But you know, with Jim was happy.
Jim got some good press for his family's nut farm.
Very much so.
But anyway, yeah, those almond skins will get you.
Tell me about it. You know what happens to me? I mean, I have a penchant for choking on water. So I was beginning a new class recently and I, same thing, introduce myself, take a sip of water. Now I'm coughing, choking, eyes watering for 3 minutes while I have seven people on Zoom with me.
Staring at me,
watching me choke to death. Yeah, making those good first impressions are always really important when you're teaching.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, I'm so embarrassed that I'm trying to make like light of it and do some one liners like, hey, would you guys think of Jim's Nuts? Like, which is not making anything better because it's just, I'm resorting to just, you know, sophomoric humor.
Was poor Jim just like shrinking in the corner at that point?
No, Jim was not a shrinker. Jim was very proud of his nuts and his family's nuts. And he, I think, was very, very happy to be sharing his nuts with the whole class. And he, you know, he probably was just, you know, upset or that his introduction, his nuts got introduced to the class that way. And I think I'll stop saying nuts now.
Yeah, it's about time. So, John, one of the fun parts of being a workshop instructor and performing for people and teaching is sometimes, especially when you work with food, you know, you get to get people to come in and demo the food. So like I was in Seattle one time doing a workshop, and the Taylor Shellfish Company, who happened to be a friend of Kate McDermott's, volunteered to send an oyster shucker for our class. So after the class was over, he shucked all these oysters and he sent them out to everybody, and everybody was having a lot of fun. And there was a gooey duck clam. And of course everyone had a big, you know, laugh with the gooey duck clam. If you don't know what a gooey duck clam is, folks, Google it. You'll be surprised and you'll understand why we laughed. But I mean, that's always been like, and you and I, when we've done these things at the blogger conferences, you know, like we get to perform and then we feed people, and it's just, it's a natural extension of what we do. And it always made me happy to do that. So, but something tells me that you have a story that might run a little counter to that.
Well, yeah, those are fun. And we always had a great time. And one of the best parts, of course, when you're done, people get to have little samples, even if it's just a little taste. You get that connection with the audience, and they kind of, they're like, yeah, that looked good when you were making it. I really want to know what it tasted like.
Yeah.
I had a bizarre experience, and I don't even know how to describe it, but I'm going to try, since if I can, it's going to be a terrible segment on a podcast.
Well, that's okay. I already know this story, and that's why I prodded you to tell it, because it's very funny and weird.
It's so weird. And so I was contacted by a major, major manufacturer of kitchenwares. And that's all I can say.
Sufficiently vague.
Because I don't want to be, you know, neutralized.
Mm-hmm.
But and by that, I mean killed. But I agreed to do this demo. And in exchange for a piece of this equipment that we were promoting during this demo, I would get, you know, I'd get a nice thing, no money, but sounded fun. And it was only like a half hour demo. I was like, I can do that. Now Macy's Cellar has a warm spot in my heart. Michelle used to work in Macy's Cellar in San Francisco. And so even before I met her, I used to go down there and have food. It was a really cool environment. This is before the term foodie, or, you know, the food revolution and food TV. Just a great spot to go look at products and cookware and food. And so I was kind of, you know, interested to do it, kind of out of character, but I decided to go for it. So this cookware company says, besides giving you a certain something, we're going to pay for the food. There's going to be about 20 people there. What do you want to do? So I came up, I'm going to do a seared duck breast, and then I'm going to show the audience how easy it is to do a pan sauce, a gastrique. You want to make it sound fancy?
Yes, I'd always want to make it sound fancy.
If we can sneak in a quick cooking lesson here, anytime you fry meat in a pan, you know those commercials for the dish soap where the person's scrubbing that, you know, that caramelized sticky mess off the bottom of the pan, and they're like,
yeah,
there must be a better way.
Yeah, there is.
Like with the soap or the sponge. No, yeah, there is a better way. Eat that stuff. Make a freaking sauce out of it. So when you learn how to make a pan sauce, it kind of is a life changer, game changer. So anyway, I said I'm going to do duck breast pan sauce. Perfect, easy to slice, easy to, you know, give people taste. I'm thinking all of this in my brain. So they say, oh, great idea. I said, I'm going to do four or five breasts, 20 people, makes sense. Bring us the receipts, take care of those. Perfect. So I show up, and the dude says, here's the itinerary. You're going to do your deal. Whenever there's a down moment, you're waiting for something to, you got to wait 2 minutes before you turn something in the pan, I'll start doing my little spiel about the cookware. At the end of the demo, you'll point to a person or two in the front row. You'll give them a taste, and then the demo will end. And then while you finish up, we'll go around with a couple of my associates, and we'll pass out flyers and coupons for discounts, and you know, let people touch these pots and pans we're trying to sell them. Sounds like a plan. Now, I just assumed, as a chef and someone from the hospitality industry, after I finished and the two chosen ones got their taste, as they were doing their spiel, I would slice this duck and pass it out, as any good chef would, even a bad chef would. And so demo goes fine. I had a few food wishers in the audience and getting a few questions. Now, I'm not very good at these things, but I thought I faked it pretty well. Didn't stutter, didn't choke on any nuts, nothing like that. So I finished the demo, or finished the recipe. The duck, just, I nailed it. Perfect medium, juicy, not too rare. Got my beautiful pan sauce, which was a berry gastrique. Translation, if you put some vinegar, deglaze the pan with vinegar, a spoon of any fruit jam, a splash of stock, seasoning, deglaze the, that's in a hunk of butter at the end, Monte Burr, just finished with a little hot cold butter. Most beautiful sauce you've ever had. Works for any meat, works for any pan. That was really the point of the demo. So I finish up, I plate one up, got four still in the sitting on the cutting board resting. Pick the people like I've been instructed to, couple in the front row, not coincidentally, the food wishers. Hey, would you guys like to taste? Oh, great. So, and during the demo, I was saying things like, oh man, wait until you guys see how this comes out. Oh man, is this going to be good? So they take a taste. Oh man, Chef John, so succulent, so delicious. Oh man, I cannot believe how good this tastes. If only everyone could taste how good this was, they were saying things. So anyway, the guy running the demos, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Chef John. What a great crowd. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you feel and touch this new cookware. We're going to give you coupons. We're going to have this other thing, a giveaway and a wrap. So that, my part was over. So what do? As any good chef would, I go to the cutting board and I start slicing up some duck. So I can now, while they're doing their thing, I'll mingle around with some of this plated up, giving people taste. So I start slicing, I start putting it on a plate, little sauce, and dude walks over and says, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going to pass out the rest of the duck. He's like, oh, no. We're not going to feed everybody. And I said, well, we don't have to feed them, but like, did you see me cook all this duck? And did you see all the people looking at me cook the duck?
Salivating in the front row.
Like, I know there's still like, there's like 15 feet away, but I think they can kind of see we still have duck. So he's like, you know what? We don't do that. I'll explain it to you later, but just do me a favor. Just, you know, wrap up your stuff and we'll help you clean up. And I'm going to get back to the, the product pushing. So I'm like, so I'm highly annoyed. I was so proud of this duck.
Right.
And now a grand total of two people, you know, out of this audience have tasted it. And I cannot for the life of me figure out what are we throwing, like, what is happening with this duck? So as I'm cleaning up my knife, I'm washing my knives, I'm getting, packing my case together, packing my backpack. I see him over in the corner, back of the kitchen, and he's now wrapped the duck in foil and he's putting it in his carryout case.
This is all an elaborate ruse to get you to cook him duck.
I swear to God it was. He didn't explain anything. He just thanked me. He gave me the free pan they promised me. So I didn't want to be a jerk like, hey, jerk, thanks for the pan, but what about the duck? So I kind of just slinked out of there, like trying not to make too much eye contact with the people that were like, oh, cool, Chef John slicing duck. This is going to be awesome. This dude just wrapped up all the duck, minus the like three slices I took off for the sample people, and took it home.
Unbelievable.
And I couldn't do anything. It's not like I can be like, hey, people, there's more of us than them. Let's
let's rush this guy. Take
rush this dude. Let there be duck. Anyway, still confused to this day. Like, if you're going to do that, just have me bring one duck breast. That's a better look. Like, we don't have enough for everybody. A couple lucky people get picked. They had the best question or whatever. I can make that work. But like, I got a whole cutting board worth a duck. Like, I can easily give every of these 20, whatever 20, 25 people a taste.
Yeah, of course.
But this dude was not having it. He was like, I'm eating duck tonight. I'm eating duck tomorrow. And then guess where I'm eating Thursday?
Some more duck. So all of you out there who have been participating with us here on the Chef John podcast know that I take pleasure in prodding Chef John a little bit and poking him a little bit and asking him about the things that drive him crazy. So I'm gonna do it again today. And I want to know, Chef John, what drives you crazy?
One thing that's driving me crazy recently, and man, I hope this trend is short-lived, but the no menu restaurants. Apparently, if we use any more paper for menus, the earth will be deforested very soon or something. I don't know. But I don't know about you. I like the ritual of the restaurant. Like you go there, you get the greeting, you sit down, the napkin, the silver, then the menu comes to the table. Would you like something to drink? Like, you know, there's a certain
rhythm, yeah.
Choreography to it. And I kind of, you know, now that I'm old curmudgeonly, I like to hold on to that stuff.
Sure.
So Michelle and I were sitting in a restaurant the other day and there's no menu come to the table. And the server comes by, hey, there, how you doing? Welcome, blah, blah, blah. Turns over their like check holder thing, whatever you call folder, I guess it is. And on the back's a barcode. And they're like, oh, to get our menu, just scan this with your phone. Well, first of all, how do you know I brought my phone? Like, does everyone just have to have a phone on them now? Is this, so we have phones, so, okay, I guess I have no choice. Pull the phone out. And I literally say, I've never scanned a barcode.
Well, it's actually called a QR code.
Don't know this.
And how often do you tell people to get off your lawn?
Well, only when they kick their balls on the lawn. Or someone's choking on some nuts. I say, can you please get off my lawn?
Right.
I do not have medical insurance. So anyway, they want me to scan. Was it called a QVC code?
No, not a QVC code. A QR code. It is a QR code.
All right. Anyway, they show me this QVC code and I go ahead and I put my phone up to it. And I'm like, what do you do? They're like, you did it. The phone knows what to do. Like they're telling me the phone's smarter than you, old timer. They almost called me a boomer, I think. I saw the lips forming boomer.
Okay, boo.
They didn't go there, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that was easier. So anyway, you hold your phone up, and as everyone that's normal in the audience knows, a menu now appears on my phone screen, which way too small to read. I'm annoyed I have to zoom in. I have to scroll from left to right
mm-hmm.
to see the price.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know. If the beer you're looking at, if you're wondering about the price, is probably too expensive, as they say. But anyway, I'm just annoyed by not only not getting a menu that I've learned after all these years to effectively scan for what I would like to eat and drink, but now I have to learn how to use QV codes, QC codes, all the codes. I'm not a coder. All right. I learned, what was it? The basic language and if X, stop. And so that's my level of coding.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm just did not enjoy my menu experience. I want to hold the menu. Sometimes I like to dog ear them. I like to fold it, like look through it like a telescope. Like I want to do stuff with the menu. It's my right as I've basically purchased this seat in your restaurant for a few hours. So I'm not, this is driving me crazy. Does this drive you crazy?
Well, I've gotten used to the thing that you're referring to, but there is one iteration of this that I just had an experience with that absolutely drove me crazy. Okay, so we go to the restaurant and there's seven people at the table and the server comes over and says, okay, so you're going to need to scan the QR code on the table, which will bring you to the menu and the ordering mechanism. So now it's a point of service program built into the QR code. So I have to scan with my phone, then create the order on the phone. Then the order goes directly to the kitchen. So the server doesn't take your order. They just come and bring the food that the POS system is. It was so confusing because like, do you start one check? Do you start seven checks? Like, how does this work? No one's really explaining it to us. And we are all sitting there and literally the ordering process took 15 minutes to order the food because we had absolutely no idea like how this worked, because literally there were three servers working this restaurant that had to seat 300 people. So it was the next iteration of what you're complaining about, because this one was sort of like, it has become completely automated and then somebody just brings the food out to you. But getting to that point was torture.
What a nightmare. And next thing, they're going to be like, excuse me, sir, would you like to add a gratuity for our network administrator?
Well, that was the thing, right? Because then the bill comes and they had already put the 20% on top of the bill for six people at the table, right? Because you have six plus people, they usually put the gratuity on. But the server didn't do anything.
And they're like, trust us, the service is going to be great. It's definitely
the server really didn't do anything. So I think that, you know, and 20% of a bill for seven people, people having drinks, people ordering appetizers. And then on top of that, there was another line in case you wanted to give an additional tip. And if you didn't scan carefully to notice that they put the 20% on already, you would have tipped on top of that. And I'm sure plenty of people are just like, oh yeah, just by rote putting the tip on.
Of course.
So man, that whole system, not only is it annoying, but it is also fairly scammy.
Hopefully it'll come full circle and people will be like, you know, they have the internet on paper now. And we just go back to, reading things and newspapers, magazines. And maybe if we're really lucky, menus that they hand you.
Chef John, what have we learned today?
Well, I think we've learned a few valuable lessons. First of all, if you're doing a cookbook and you have a chance to promote it on QVC with Cooking with David or someone else, make sure you see and proof the final printed version of the book to make sure there's no American Pie Pies before you have to call and blow someone's mind canceling an appearance, which has never happened before and will certainly never happen again.
Nope.
Secondly, if you are about to start a lecture in front of a new class that you really need to impress and engage, do not, under any circumstances, put nuts in your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good one.
You might choke, it will be embarrassing, and it'll be an awkward start. And then last but not least, if you ever get invited to a cooking demo in Macy's cellar, you might want to have a bite to eat before you get there. There might not be any samples of the food given out.
None.
Even though there will be plenty around, you just might not get any.
That is a lot to learn. I will add this other part too. We learned that Chef John does not know what a QR code is.
Never heard of QVC code. Don't care. Hope I miss the whole trend and it just fades away. And the only thing I'm scanning is an actual paper menu to see what I want to eat. Anyway, say goodnight, Andrew.
Good night, Andrew.